Okay, we're back. Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so well, we'd like to welcome everybody this evening to Karen Scholl's teleseminar. Be ready to get started. My name's Melinda Garish, and Mike and I are the owners of Cutting Up Stables here in Shirley, Indiana. And we have a horse motel, so anybody traveling around in our area, please stop by. Karen, how exciting. I haven't talked to you since I got the email on the TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to start maybe telling us a little bit about that, and then we'll get started on the questions?
Sure. You know, I've done a few shows on RSD TV, but an ongoing show just wasn't feasible for us. And we came across an organization that's on the educational channels, and it's on Dish Network. It's channel number 9411, and it airs every Saturday and Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock Pacific time. So it's the same show on Saturday and Sunday, but then the following week it'll be a different show. And we're just really looking forward to it. We have episodes that are already out. The first one aired last weekend. And we've got a schedule where we're going to be filming some more shows and different challenging horses and all kinds of different things. So we're really pretty excited about it.
Okay, so when you look on the directory, then will it say Karen Scholl's Horsemanship for Women, if I'm like trying to record that ahead of time on the schedule? You know?
Yeah, you know, I believe it does. I believe that if you look on the directory, the title of the show is there, but it's 8 a.m. Pacific time on both Saturday and Sunday mornings.
Okay, because I think we can get that channel, so I'll have to check that out.
Great.
So. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And they're in negotiation. Right now they're not on DirecTV, but they're negotiating to add on to DirecTV. So we're looking forward to maybe some expansion of their shows. It's on the channel's called University House. And like I said, it's one of the educational channels.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and you'll see lots of people. There's some other educators and horses. They're looking to expand their horse programming on that particular channel. So you'll be seeing lots of folks expanding on there.
Okay. Well, fun. How exciting for you. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot of questions here to get started. The first one we're going to talk about is herdbound. And as we've been talking before this got started, I know we've definitely got a listener in that's having this problem. So I think we'll get started. Sue Ann is the one that wrote in the question, Karen. She's from Maine. And she says she has a 19-year-old Appy mare and a 12-year-old standardbred gelding that are totally herd-bound. She's threatened her spouse that if he doesn't ride more, she's going to get a third horse to provide company to the one that's left behind so he doesn't call the one I'm trying to ride. While I'd love to have a third horse, with the economy being what it is, I like to be able to break my two of this bad habit. Any suggestions, and many thanks, and look forward to meeting you in Maine. And speaking of that, I think you're going to be doing a clinic out there.
Yeah, we've got a clinic scheduled next month in Maine. I'm looking forward to it. You know, herdbound is a very common question. What I like to think of is that horses get bound or get attached to the leader in the herd. Now, there's nothing you can really do for the horse that's left behind other than what you already described is get them a buddy. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a horse. It could be a goat or, you know, something else that they would bond to. But even if you get a third horse, it doesn't necessarily mean that that will change the bond between the horse that's left behind and the one that you're taking out. So don't count on that being a for sure answer to the problem. Because horses have relationships based on individuals just like humans do. So having another horse in the pasture doesn't mean that that horse won't still run the fence line when you take that other horse out. The only thing that you can really do is be mindful about what the horse that's with you is herd bound to you. So how I like to think of it as is when I walk in and take one of the horses out, that horse needs to be relaxed and confident with me, and that's through my demonstration of leadership. I did a demonstration as a fundraiser last night for the Colorado Horse Rescue. It's the largest and oldest horse rescue in the state of Colorado, and we did that at their facility last night. They brought out two different horses, different pastures, and the main problem both these horses had is they wanted to get back into the pastures with their herd mates. And so when they led these horses out, I mean, the folks, the wonderful people there, but the horses were just kind of walking around them and calling and, you know, reaching down to eat grass and calling again. And, you know, and one horse got, the second horse got really upset, and the woman was holding her pretty close, you know, thinking, well, you know, she's having a problem and that's what we should do. And the horse got to a point where it was looking to bite her. So the teeth came out, and I ended up taking the horse away right then and helped the horse. But in both of those cases, what was so amazing to the audience that had gathered there is that those horses seemed upset and fretful. And what our tendency to do, being especially as women in our nature to nurture, is we don't want to do anything that would further upset them. But what the horse needs is a demonstration of leadership from who they're with in that moment. Now, from the question, I don't hear that that's so much the problem as the horse that's left behind. But all you can do is really put that horse with safe fencing and, allow it to just be a horse. I mean, that is what horses do. So, but the horse that's with you, these horses were, both of them were right on top of me instantly. They were not respecting my personal space, and they were just all over me. And so the first thing I do is, anybody that's seen me in a clinic or in a demonstration, is I request that horse to understand where my boundary is of personal space. The second horse in particular just was looking to just jump on top of me. Oh, I'm so upset, so I'm, you know, hold me, I'm fragile. It's like, I can't hold you, you're huge. You know, go be fragile away from me. That is, to me, in my opinion, that's the number one injury that we have with horses. So in all the things that I teach, in personal space on the ground, taking the hindquarters away while riding, you know, reasserting our leadership position when conditions change, those are the things that make the difference in that horse's mind. And both of those horses, you know, I adopted a posture, pressure, wave of warning, and a mama's bite to back them away from me. And the one horse started circling around and calling, and I, you know, bit her until she found her place of comfort. And it was really amazing. She just cocked her back leg and put her head down and relaxed and quit calling. And it happened within 5 minutes. And so it was really amazing. I asked the audience, they all kind of had this funny look on their face. I said, raise your hand if you're surprised that I put pressure on the horse backed out of my personal space, and now the horse is relaxed, where a moment ago this horse was very upset and fretting. Everybody raised their hand and said, I don't understand how those two things work together. So the number one thing to do is worry about, be mindful of the horse that you're with, make sure that you're demonstrating leadership, you know, as the conditions change, as you get further away or whatever that is, and just keep reminding that horse that they're bonding to you and your qualities of leadership. So I hope that that answers that question. It's a very common one, but both of those horses, they were rescue horses. One was starved and in her 20s. Another horse was, I think she was probably 14 or so, but had gotten really pretty dangerous, how herd-bound they were and how upset they got when they got taken out of the herd to a point where they were very difficult to be handled. Both of those horses, when I demonstrated leadership, I had slack in the lead line, and the horses were just standing there completely relaxed, circled them, moved them around, whatever I asked of them. What I want that horse to understand is when I have an intensity, a posture of intensity, it means move your feet. When I'm relaxed, no matter what's going on around you, you relax. And the first horse, I got to a point where the horse was standing there relaxed, and I was cracking the stock whip around her. And she had she wasn't even looking for the herd. So it was a really good demonstration or illustration of what that quality of leadership will bring out in the horse that you're with.
Okay. And Karen, I want to have you take that a little bit further, because I know we're talking on the ground. If they're on the horse, can you kind of go in that a little bit as far as how they would go ahead and get that? Because I think that's where
leader,
people tend to have trouble, is when they're actually on the back.
Yeah. Well, if you're having trouble on the back, you are having trouble on the ground. You just might have skipped over it. We're going riding, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, number one thing, if you are having trouble on the back, and it took me a lot of years to realize this, get off the horse. You know, if you start feeling that you're in danger, you know, step off the horse and demonstrate leadership on the ground. Now, don't get off the horse and give them a cookie. You know, that's not the idea of it, but you can step off the horse, demonstrate leadership on the ground where you don't feel like the horse might buck or rear if, you know, if the horse is really getting bothered. But you can step down and use your ground skills to reassert the leadership position that you're looking for. If you feel comfortable up on the horse's back, and I do this with my own horses. I get in situations or conditions where our son Bergante says, "Karen, I don't know about this deal," you know, and or he'll say, "Well, hey, I know we're going this way. I'll just, you know, I'm not going to wait for you to ask." And I have to reassert my leadership up on the horse's back. But I feel confident doing that. And what I do is I take the hindquarters away. I shut that deal down. A horse loses its power when you disengage the hindquarters. So taking that rein and tipping that nose around and putting my leg on and having the front feet hold still, the hindquarters disengages, that horse all of a sudden says, "Okay, yeah, you're right. You're the one driving this tugboat." Okay? And I do that with my own horses. That's what that muscle memory is for. It's not if something goes wrong. It's when something goes wrong. You automatically will know what to do up in the saddle, you know, take away the hindquarters, or if you don't feel comfortable or confident doing that, you feel like the horse might rear or something or buck, step down. Bend that horse around, step down safely, and then reassert your leadership on the ground. It's all about getting that horse's, getting the horse to become mindful of you. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And there's kind of an example of this, and I can almost testimony to this, because you've dealt with Latigo, and you kind of remember how he was when you first saw him kind of dancing around like a marlin. And we went out and rode him again this about a month or so out in Missouri. And we were still working on the transition of that canter. And I know we've had a lot of questions the last couple months about that transition into the canter, and it seems like people have a lot of trouble with that. And Latigo was doing well out there, Karen, if Mike was cantering along with me, you know. And if I wanted to do it on my own, it was like, uh-uh, you know. And then we had that fussing. So I went back, and I said, okay, we're stuck there. We've got a problem. So I went back, worked on the ground part of it. Been about an hour off and on here, and it fixed it. I mean, it was just, you know. So
yeah, it's amazing.
Go back to that. It really is, because I mean, here we were fussing, and you know, and he was just arguing and carrying on. And I thought, okay, you know, Karen, I remember what Karen says. So go back and start that again, you know. And and he did his fussing on the ground for a little bit, and then he's like, okay, I understand, and he worked it out. So. I appreciate you sharing that with me, and we've got him doing that. And then I'm going to kind of brag, because you mentioned the stock whip. Did Mark tell you I'm standing on him cracking the whip now, an 8-foot whip?
Isn't that great? And he was the demo horse in Indiana last year.
He was
That's
crazy.
Great.
So I'll have to
send
you a picture. So, but I mean, you can just take your tapes and just take them to whatever you can imagine, and take your horse to whatever level you want it to be. You know, so I really appreciate it. So, okay, well, back to questions here. I kind of went off on a tangent there. This one comes in from Sandy out in Colorado, and it has to do with crossing water. She has a new 5-year-old horse, and it's never been across kind of streams that we have there in Colorado on trail rides. And she says, "I've not been able to get him to cross. Any suggestions?"
Okay. Again, the leadership element is what's lacking right there. And if you think of it this way, Sandy, if the herd of horses was crossing the water, that horse would cross the water on its first day of life. It just would. So the question then is how do you go back to getting that kind of leadership? And a lot of times what happens is we don't realize this, but we're not asking that much of our horses. You know, we're asking them to stay calm, and we're asking them to do this. And when you get into a situation that goes beyond their threshold, and every horse has a threshold, don't get me wrong, there is no, you know, perfect horse out there that, you know, does everything. There's going to be something that they're, you know, going to run into, and you're always going to be looking to challenge your horses in those ways. So the best thing to do with a crossing water, what I like to do, and we're actually developing a video on this, is to start online on the ground. So find a place, you know, trailer your horse out to, you know, where there's water. Or if you're riding in a rope hackamore, you can step down. If you have a McCarty rein, you can do this. Step down off the horse, because what a horse sometimes will do when they're uncertain about water is they'll jump into it. And unless you like riding jumping horses, some people do and would think that that's fun, but some, you know, a lot of people don't, you can step down off that horse and send that horse using the feel of your lead rope, support with the end of your lead rope, either swinging it or twirling it, and ask that horse, just like if you were trailer loading or jumping barrels or anything like that, ask that horse, every time it goes closer to what it is that you want it to do, you give it relief. So if you start on the ground with a long line and send that horse in, just, you know, use the same technique as I do on the trailer loading, every time that horse takes a step towards the water, release the pressure. Then back the horse up, put a feel on that lead rope, send him in again. As the horse is going towards what you want, be sure to release the pressure. A lot of times, one of the common mistakes I see with people, whether it's crossing water or at the trailer or things like that, is that as the horse gets closer to what it is you want them to do, people's nature is to keep the momentum up by increasing the pressure the closer they get to it. What happens in the horse's mind is the horse says, the closer I get to water, the more pressure there is. Or the closer I get to the trailer, the more pressure there is. So therefore, go in reverse and get out of there. So that's what I would do with this, is I'd go to a place where you could set up water. I mean, if you can't do that, shoot, get the garden hose out and make a big mud puddle. You know, let it run half a day or something and make a big mud puddle and just start practicing that at home. Or crossing a tarp. Or jumping some barrels. Those are all things that are challenging when a horse says, well, I'm okay going down the trail, or I'm okay going around the arena, but you put something challenging in front of me, and then, you know, everything goes out the window. So it's funny when I get these questions, because yesterday at the demonstration at the horse rescue, Colorado Horse Rescue, I went around. I just go for a little ride on my horses before the demo started, and they had kind of a little obstacle course, had a little trail out in the field and had these obstacles set up, and I thought, oh, we'll just go ride around out here. Well, I got to a spot where there were these tore-up tires bound together with wire, and they were kind of great big bales of these tires, which were kind of odd, and I thought, well, I'll go ride among those, and that was great. And then I went a little further down the trail, and there were two of those bales of cut-up, you know, tires, and then between it was a raised platform. It wasn't very high, maybe, I don't know, 8 inches high, but it was wide, and it was, you know, bookended by these two big tire bales. Well, between the bales of tires wasn't a problem, but stepping up on that platform, all of a sudden Bergante said, you know, I don't think so. This doesn't look safe for man or beast. And so when he walked up to that, what I felt him do was not say, no way, Jose, but he checked in with me and he said, Karen, what do you think of this deal? And I said, you know what? I know it looks a little odd to you, and I'm not sure that the footing's real good either because it had been out there for a while, and I wanted to make sure the wood was good. He wasn't going to fall through. So I said, how about if you just put your feet up on it, your front feet up on it, let's see how it's going to bear weight. I want to see what the condition of the wood is. So he did that, and then we backed up, and I squeezed him and asked him to walk on through because he was even setting up to jump that spread. I was like, I don't want to ride the big jump either. So my horse questions where we're going sometimes too, but that's where your communication kicks in. Do you have the ability to hold the conversation when you get in those situations? And that's what all the basics, all the riding from the ground, riding from above, all your time at the clinic, moving the hindquarters, moving the front end. I'll bet I made about 18 adjustments with Bergante's body and then released when he was set up to step up onto that. I had to do the same thing with my horse yesterday. Okay? So it's not about the water. It's not about the, you know, funny jump. It's not about the trailer. It's, can you hold the conversation and change the horse's mind about what it is that you're asking him to do through that conversation? So release when the horse is getting closer, but but again, that would start on the ground. If Bergante gave me too much trouble or is really having a hard time, I would have stepped down and used the lead line on my Makati rein, had him do that, because if he wanted to jump it, he could jump it back and forth a few times until he realized that he could just step over it. So I would have done the same thing with my own horse yesterday in that situation. So I hope that gives you the steps to help your horse get through the water. But we're putting a video together. There's a lot more. That's the basics of it, but there's a lot more to that and how you get there. But that's what the riding from the ground is all about.
Okay. Well, very good. So, okay, on to the next question. Time's just flying here.
Okay.
This one is from Dwayne, and he sent in some pictures, Karen. And what his picture showed that he was, you know, on the horse using a simple rope halter with a lead rope attached to both ends. And he said this was his first ride on Tango after several hours or days of groundwork. What he wants to know, is there a disadvantage to riding her with just the halter and lead rope? Do you have a package that you would recommend and sell? He's wanting to know what kind of head stall, bridle bit, et cetera, would you recommend for a pleasure riding?
And I'm not sure, is this the horse's first ride? Are we talking about a colt?
Well,
he
doesn't say an age of a horse, but it was the first ride on Tango that he had had after he had done some groundwork. So I would say, yeah, he's just starting her out.
Okay. Colt starting is a whole different subject. That is weeks, it's years of study to start a colt. So I'm not going to go into that particular discussion, but on a first ride on a rideable horse, for example, when we ride in clinics, that it's pretty common. I have everybody doing everything on the ground, disengaging the hindquarters, moving the front end, and one of the things I'll mention is all rope halters are not created equal. So just because it's made out of rope doesn't necessarily mean it was designed with feel. And unfortunately, you know, the bottom line is the bottom line for businesses, and people make rope halters out of less expensive material, not realizing that it changes the feel to the horse. So I'm going to put that little clause in there, and without seeing a photograph and seeing what it is, there's only one other organization that makes a rope halter that I know for a fact is designed with feel. Even the people that make my rope halters, they think I'm crazy because I have so many specifics that I need to have made, you know, into that rope halter to make it a tool for communication. So there's a lot of unknowns here, but what I will tell you is that when you have great communication on the ground, the horse follows a feel, tipping their nose, lateral flexion, moving the front end, all of those things. When you have that on the ground, there's nothing wrong with riding in a rope halter with one rein. And Melinda, you've ridden in clinics with me, and it's really amazing because I'll have people just sit up on their horse. I'll just teach them lateral flexion, bending the horse, moving the hindquarters, disengaging the hindquarters, and I'll say, you know, just step up, fold your lead rope up over the horse's neck, and step up and sit on your horse. And people are going, but I have no control. And I go, well, you actually have more control in this setup because if anything goes wrong, you're guaranteed to do the right thing, which is pull on one rein. If you slow down one side of the horse, the other side of the horse has to slow down. But what happens, because we're predators by nature, we tend to clutch or snatch up things and pull things that are in our hands. So if I give people two reins too soon, what they end up doing is pulling on two reins, which actually engages the hindquarters and empowers the hindquarters. So if the horse becomes confused, the horse's hindquarters are empowered to do things like run away, buck, rear, all of those things. When a horse rears, it's because the person put them in a position to rear. But we don't realize that because we're not aware of what our muscle memory is doing. So riding in a halter and lead is what I start off with every horse. Then I'll tie the rein around or go into a rope hackamore. And I'll ride with a rope hackamore, which is basically the rope halter. It's tied a little bit longer. There's a set of Makati reins on there. The Makati reins give you a set of reins with a lead line attached. The nice thing about riding with a rope hackamore and the Makati reins is that you, as you have different needs, that tool can change because you can change the length of the rein for different size of horses. And for different purposes, you can lengthen that lead line. So in the other person, when we were talking about crossing water, if you're riding in a rope hackamore with a Makati rein and say, you know, that there's quite a bit of water and you want your horse to go further out into it, you can shorten your reins by loosening that knot. Don't untie it all the way. Yeah, unless you're familiar with that knot, it's hard to figure out how to tie it again. But you can shorten those reins and lengthen the lead line out and have your horse now instead of, you know, 10 feet in the water, you could send your horse, you know, 15, 20 feet into the water on a longer lead line and then bring the horse in and out of the water and come back, and then you can set it up again, lengthen your rein again, and have a regular lead line length of that Makati rein. That's why I use a Makati rein, because I have so much versatility. Conversely, you can shorten the lead line part and lengthen out your rein and make a set of drive lines. So there's a lot of versatility to the tools, and I explain those on my website. But what I do is I ride with a halter and lead first, then I go into a rope hackamore, and I'll ride that. And like with my horse Deb, I'll bet I rode him for more than a year in that. Because if he didn't understand something, I wanted to stay outside of his mouth. If he was going to push into my hand, I wanted that push to be on a soft rope halter that's thin enough to make it uncomfortable enough for him on the outside of his nose. So I didn't ride him in a snaffle bridle for, it was probably more than a year, it was about 14, 15 months before I put a bit in his mouth. And then I took the bit and took the reins off it, and I rode him in the rope hackamore and just had him wear the bit. I bet I had him wear the bit for probably 3 months until he just thought, well, I guess she just puts a piece of metal. There was never any pressure on that bit. So he got comfortable and confident with a piece of metal in his mouth. So there's a lot to that transition and further developing a horse. I have people say, well, you know, if I can ride in the rope hackamore, why would I ever use a bit? Well, I want to refine my communication. I want to have clearer communication with my horse. So my goal is to be able to develop a horse from a snaffle bridle into a bosal, and then eventually into a shank bit with a bosalito, and eventually have a finished, what's called a finished bridle horse. So my development and the development of a horse into a shank bit in the method of study that I'm following, which is a tradition of California Vaquero, that's about a 12 to 15 year process. Okay? I want people to understand that developing a horse is what you're doing. And what you're doing today, one of my teachers, Mr. Ronnie Willis, he had a wonderful saying when we'd start colts. He'd say, you know, you never know if you're working on the start or the finish, because it's the same. So if you can kind of hold that in mind, I would try to stay out of the horse's mouth as long as possible, and then if you think of it, I'm developing this horse with confidence, with communication, and this is a long-term project. Kind of hold that in mind, but there's some wonderful books around California Vaquero, the bridle horse, developing a bridle horse. There's very masterful people along that methodology, but that's probably the best answer I can give you right there.
Okay. And, you know, going back to when I was telling you, I had to, you know, go back and work with Latigo on the canter. I did use just the halter and lead and got my hands out of his mouth, you know, with the, mm-hmm. the snaffle bit and everything, and took that fight away and just kind of went back to that. And he
right.
responded way better
yeah.
than if,
yeah.
you know, we were
It's really amazing when I saw a demonstration this last weekend, and the person was out there with a bit in the horse's mouth and doing flying lead changes, and the horse, to me, appeared very tight. The horse did not appear, you know, the horse was doing everything. But then they took the whole bridle off the horse and did a beautiful bridleless demonstration. The horse never switched its tail, never got tight. The lead changes were just absolutely stunning. And I went, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the which did the horse prefer? But it doesn't mean that you can't develop a horse to be relaxed in the bridle. There was nothing wrong with the bridle. It just, there was a disconnect there. You can actually connect with a horse's mind easier if the horse is not worrying about the pressure coming from a piece of metal inside of their mouth. The two most sensitive parts of a horse are where the apples go in and where the apples come out. And then we're just told to put a piece of metal in their mouth. And I know when I first started riding a horse, it was a shank bit, had a chain curb, and the horse kept throwing its head, and they said, oh, she throws her head. You know, it can't be you, Karen. Let's put a tie down on her. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, it couldn't be me.
Yeah.
Well, that was like giving a kid, you know, a loaded gun. You know, it didn't know what to do with it. But if you take a young child out, if somebody has a family tradition of target shooting or something like that, if you take a child out and give them a, you know, a BB gun and you teach them respect of it and you get them familiar with it, you know, there's a way that you can develop anything with safety. But that takes knowledge and it takes respect of what you're teaching. So.
Okay. Well, hopefully we've helped Dwayne, and there's certainly a lot of DVDs that he can go and refer to. And you can, you can get the halter and lead if that's what he's needing on your website as well. So
And the rope hackamore is available also. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Well, good. Okay. The next question is from Sue, and it's gaining confidence in the saddle. Her question is, I started to build my relationship with her on the ground when she was 3, and it took her up until now for her to trust me fully. We have a great relationship on the ground, and we play all 7 games with ease. She even lines up with me perfectly, so I can mount her with a saddle or without. But as soon as I start riding her, all trust is gone. She is tense and usually tries to rear at least once. I know as I have gotten older, my confidence has gone less, but I am able to ride my other 2 horses much more confidently. How can I build up my leadership in the saddle?
So I don't know, because she said she started interacting with a horse when she was 3, but I don't know how much time has passed between now and then or how much riding time the horse has.
Yeah, it doesn't.
So these are some big questions there. If this is a rideable horse, if there have been people that have been riding the horse, maybe not the owner, but if it's a rideable horse, because this could tip into another question of colt starting. And like I said, colt starting is a very high level of study. It's a very high level of study. It's like, you know, the most experienced teacher, the highest requirement of teaching skills should be our kindergarten teachers, you know, because that is the first experience we all have with learning and with school. And that's going to form our first impression and create patterns for learning that we'll live with, you know, for our whole life. So, you know, a colt starter is somebody who does that professionally all the time and gives the horse a good start. I had somebody yesterday say to me, well, I break colts. And I said, well, I try to fix them. You know, it's not about breaking them or breaking their spirit. It's about how do you develop them with confidence. So if that's the scenario that you're not a professional colt starter and this horse needs more confidence under saddle, I can recommend several people that do that professionally, and I can personally say personally that they do a fantastic job. The horse you get back will be just soft, understanding, confident, all of those things. Not every person who hangs a shingle out and says, I start colts, is going to necessarily give you back a horse that you're going to be able to just ride off into the sunset with and keep building your relationship and your confidence. And I can't tell you how many people have said to me, you know, I sent my horse off for training and I got back a monster and now my horse doesn't trust me anymore. So don't let go of all the good things that you've done up to this point, but you can find somebody through, I can refer you to them, who are going to enhance and maintain what you've got, but get the horse to have more time under saddle to develop the confidence in the horse. So, now, if that's not the case, if the horse has been ridden quite a bit and you want to help the horse gain more confidence, it doesn't sound like that's the case because you're telling me you have a question of confidence there. But if you're feeling like you want to be able to really get through that, again, taking the horse's hindquarters. And if your horse is rearing, the number one reason a horse rears is because you have feel on two reins, which tells the horse whoa. And especially if you've done, you know, a really nice job sensitizing the horse to that pressure, if you pick up two reins and then you squeeze with your legs, the horse says, well, the squeeze means go, but the reins mean whoa, so I don't know what to do, so I'm going to go up. So, for example, I'm teaching my horse Brigante. We're at a stage I've just introduced him to a very high-level movement. It's called a lavade. It's not a rear. It's pretty easy to get teach a horse to rear, but I want to teach him lavade, which means he's going to hold his hindquarters, his front feet are just going to come off the ground slightly, and he's going to hold that. It's a very, very challenging maneuver for a horse. So how I did that is I held both reins, squeezed my legs, and he had nowhere to go but up. And in the moment of up, I released it. That's how you teach a horse to rear. So when people say their horse is rearing, if I watch them, I can see exactly what they're doing. That's what communicates to a horse to rear. One rein controls the horse. If my horse, and sometimes this is why I'm very delicate with this, because sometimes I'm asking Brigante to do something else, and he mistakes it for a lavade, and he goes to lift up. Well, if he does that a couple of times and I say, hey, that's not what I'm asking for here, I'll switch to one rein and push his hip away, disengage his hindquarters, and say, let me clear this up. It's not lavade right now. I need you to back up, you know, and hold a cat or something else. So the communication between you and your horse sounds like it's being challenged. And what you may want to do is go back to what I recommended to Duane, is ride with a halter in one rein. Then you can't be inadvertently holding on two reins. And then the horse, if you've got one rein, then you can't be kind of hanging onto their head, because then you just go in a circle. It actually teaches your hands just to let go and let that horse have zero pressure while you're riding. Because remember, if the horse is doing what you want it to do, it needs to have zero pressure. Okay? As you and the horse get more confident in your communication together, then you would add a second rein. But I've had people in clinics that I can't get them to let go of the pressure on the horse's head, even if it's light. Even if it's very light, it's enough to bother that horse, especially if you've done a good job to sensitize that horse to that feel. And I'll go ahead and just take one rein away. Say, you have to ride with one rein. And they go, well, why? And I said, you'll see. And they go back to riding with one rein, just like Melinda said. And she just went, you know what? It goes better because you're letting that horse, you're insured of letting that horse's head go. So what's happening is your horse is getting mixed messages from you. So let's clear up the messages that you're sending to the horse. Go backwards and simplify it. The other benefit to riding with one rein is you've been doing that on the ground with a halter and lead. So why change it? What you're already communicating with one rein from the ground. That's why I call it riding from the ground. So don't change that. Don't change anything. Get up on the horse's back, halter in one rein, and just see if that doesn't make a difference for your horse.
Mm-hmm. And I think she's doing the right thing, because when I think of someone that doesn't have confidence with something, then it kind of almost goes hand in hand with, you know, they probably have some fear, and then the horse picks up on that. And the only way to get through that fear is to gain more knowledge.
Yeah.
And get the DVDs and you know, work through that. And that's what I have found. I mean, I've got several horses, but Latigo's been my challenge. And
right.
Gaining more and more knowledge through there has worked through some of those things.
Yeah, it changes everything, doesn't it?
It really does.
Well, good. Good.
Let's see, what time do we have? It's about 10 till. I think we've got time for another question here.
Great.
Okay. This one is from Michelle, and she's currently riding in a cheap all-purpose English saddle with a Theraflex pad, and it seems to work well, and I know the Theraflex has made a difference as opposed to a fleece pad. However, at this time, she can't afford an expensive saddle like a Balance saddle or a Pirelli saddle or another high-end type saddle, and she wants you to know if she can please talk about attributes one should be looking for in either an English or Western saddle, trees, bars, etc., or, you know, maybe what type of brand you might feel is fairly decent while being less expensive, say under $1,000. Do you have any thoughts there for her?
I'll tell you, if you ever find the answer to that, somebody better let me know. I get that question all the time. I had it this morning. I was leaving a facility and the woman was asking me saddle questions. I personally have a balanced saddle for my English. I'm looking at another brand of saddle. I won't mention it because I don't have an opinion of it yet. The balanced saddles are absolutely tremendous. And what I would do is just keep riding it, what you're riding in, and just plan for a year from now, 2 years from now, whatever it is, and just open a separate, you know, savings account or something and invest in a good saddle. I'll tell you, if I would have invested in a quality saddle from the start, it would have cost me less than all the other under $1,000 saddles that I got, didn't work, and then I couldn't sell them for what I bought them for. And that's just the honest-to-goodness truth. Quality gear is absolutely worth the investment. And I have bought everything, you know, from discount everything. So I've done that. I was the, you know, queen of State Line Tack and, you know, all of these things. And we do need to watch our money. But the thing with horses is that in a hobby that has your safety in its hand, you are putting your life and livelihood and well-being into the trust. You're entrusting it to your equipment. And when we try to save money on it, it's been my experience every time I've tried to save money on equipment, it costs me more money. You know, and everybody has the tack room full of stuff, you know, that we've tried and we think, okay, well, this is it and this is it and, oh, this is on sale. And, you know, it just becomes more that gathers dust. And then people have a big tax sale, and you take all that stuff down there, and you sell it for pennies on the dollar. So what I would do is stick with what you've got for right now. Decide on what you're wanting. Make sure you're on my mailing list, because the saddle that I'm looking at has a lot of potential, I think. But I need more time with it. And I'll be sure to let you know. But I'm always looking for that saddle as well, is what's something that's under $1,000 that's a quality saddle. And to me, I just don't know of one. And I've tried lots and lots of saddles, and I keep looking for that. But that's a tough combination. Everybody's looking for that combination of in a saddle, but it's a tough one to find. And there's reasons for that. You know, there's reasons for it. Craftsmanship is not cheap, and unfortunately a lot of our manufacturing is moving to China. Our leather is getting shipped to China. I mean, there's a whole thing behind the scenes in the industry that's going on that a lot of people don't realize. But, you know, wasn't that what generation or two ago made in China was, you know, a completely different message than what it is today. But anyway, that's a whole other subject I could get into. Won't do that here, but.
Yeah, something we have here in Indiana, I don't know if you have it in your area or not, but one of the tack stores that we have that sells a lot of saddles, because if you sit on a saddle on just a saddle rack, they're different feeling than once you get it on the horse, and he's willing to let you put it on your horse, try it out before you buy it. So if you can find a place that's willing to do that, that's helpful.
Yeah, any reputable saddle shop will let you do that. Any reputable, if they just say, oh, no, you got to decide right now, buy it, take it out the door, it's yours. Don't buy a saddle from that person because there's too many variables. And so when you look at saddles, number one, it has to fit the job. So it sounds like you want to ride English, that's the job. Then it needs to fit the horse, number two. Then it needs to fit you. That's third. So, again, I'm always looking for that combination, but I haven't found anything that really, for under $1,000, that really is quality gear. But I'm still looking. I'm looking. So.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to try to squeeze one more in here.
Sure.
This is from Arlene, And she says, although the basic principles of horsemanship are the same, the respect, leadership, etc., what is your opinion on different breeds of horses, what the horse is used for, like roping cows versus show hack, for example, and what techniques to apply and which ones to put aside? I have a national show horse that I've had for 2 months, and I'm following some basic groundwork principles, and I plan to show him in some small community shows for fun, maybe easy trail someday. What are the things I should spend the most time on when training and groundwork so that I can safely start riding him? He has been greenbroke and ridden by a prior owner. Thank you. P.S. Thanks for being there and not making people like me feel embarrassed to ask questions.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because questions are the key to knowledge, you know. And unfortunately, I've been in situations too where I've not felt comfortable asking questions. So I'm glad that you recognize that. Probably the thing I would think of is, if this horse is just starting out and just green broke, I wouldn't take it to the shows too soon. I would really get that horse solid. You know, one of my goals, well, my goal with horses, with my personal horses, and I invite people to share this goal, is to be able to go anywhere, anytime, do anything, and have fun doing it. So to me, the show is your end goal, and the more you can do to prepare the horse for that, I would do everything on the ground that you can imagine, you know, everything to desensitize the horse to sudden different things. I would, you know, really get the horse confident under saddle, because when you get into a show environment, the challenge that people have is we take these horses and we say, okay, well, now you're two, you're going to the show. And, you know, we're going to ride in a futurity. And some horses can handle it, and some horses absolutely cannot. And that's where we miss an opportunity to help develop the horse's confidence. And to me, the show may be the goal, but I will not give up my principle. If it's not good for the horse, then I'm not going to put that horse in a situation that's beyond its confidence level. I want that horse to go into a show and be so calm, cool, and confident that it just is another day to that horse. So it sounds like from where you're at, I would put that on your long-term goal list and then just keep doing the things that you're doing with the ground on the horse's back, get control of all the corners of the horse so you can move, you know, the front left foot 3 inches and back 1 inch, you know, very specifically. I'd get things very, very specific with that horse because that's where the confidence will arise. So when you go to the show, that horse and you have such a strength in your conversation and your communication that that show is just another day for that horse. So if I can kind of give you that concept, then you'll know how to approach it. And I've been in situations with my horse where I've done some things and I've gone, you know what, this isn't good for my horse, and I pulled out of it because I wasn't in a position to be able to take my horse into it with the approach that I would prefer. It was kind of one of those things. Well, you know, here we go, and you just got to go. And I just went, well, that's that. I'm not going to do anything at the expense of my relationship with my horse. So you just have to decide, and you'll know when it's the right time. You'll know in your gut when you're sitting there doing things and you've gone to different things, and your horse just kind of goes, yep, another day, just another day. See? Then you're ready for the next challenge. So, you know, where I'm at with my horses, I was at an expo last fall, and some folks were there doing mounted shooting. And we had some time, and they invited me out. They said, hey, would you like to, you know, do some mounted shooting? And I said, well, absolutely I would. And I spent about 40 minutes preparing my horse through probably 5 different stages before I ever shot a gun off of his back. And the way I approached it was just the things that you're doing with your horse. Just, you know, start far away, start get a, you know, closer, and just do gradual kind of things. And by the time I shot the gun off of his back, he didn't even flinch. He said, just another day. But that's where I'm at with the horse. And mounted shooting, boy, that's a lot of fun. But I'll tell you what, I can count on one hand how many confident horses I've seen in a mounted shooting competition. And to me, that's what I'd like to see. If they would do add one thing to, say, barrel racing and mounted shooting, if at the end of your run you had to stand in a marked circle, drop your reins, and shoot a gun, shoot 6 rounds out of a, you know, fully loaded gun, and not have your horse move out of the ring. See, it would change the horsemanship side to that competition. There's nothing wrong with competition as long as it's healthy competition. So hopefully that kind of gives you some ideas and some concepts to be able to look for as you're progressing towards your ultimate goal of taking the horse to the show. But anything that's going to be at the expense of the horse, or the horse is going to lose trust in you, I would just keep building towards that rather than just going straight to the show. But all the techniques that I'm talking about on the ground, on the horse's back, all of that is just a basis of communication for whatever you'd want to do with the horse.
Okay, everybody, thank you for joining us. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye, everybody.
Good night, everybody.